I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Oliver.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you are interested in helping support the podcast and would like to become a Patreon sponsor yourself, just go to our website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to become a Patreon donor. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's episode, we are going to have part two of our interview with Wayne Galash. And Wayne, of course, was one of the most prominent photographers and videographers in the bodybuilding world going all the way back to 1970. Wayne is responsible for recording and videotaping some of the most iconic bodybuilding competitions and some of the most legendary bodybuilders in the bodybuilding world, including Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bill Pearl and Frank Zane and Mike Mentzer, and the list goes on and on. So without Wayne's contribution to the sport of bodybuilding, we would not have videotape of some of these great competitions and some of these real legends of the sport. So last week we talked to Wayne about how he got started doing the photography and the videotaping of the competitions. And today we're going to continue our discussion with Wayne, and we're going to talk about some of the legendary competitions he saw and some of the iconic bodybuilders that he photographed. And when we get done with our interview with Wayne, I am going to read an article written by Wayne for the September 1977 issue of Iron Man magazine. And it's called Bertel Fox, His Story. And this was right after Bertel won, I believe, the Mr. World contest, the AAU Mr. World. And it was right when Bertel was getting started on his rise to bodybuilding fame. And speaking of that, the big news this week is that Bertel Fox has been released from prison. He has been pardoned. And Bertel, as you know, or if you don't know, was convicted of murder in 1997 out in St. Kitts, where he was born, I believe, and where he was living. And Bertel was retired from bodybuilding, and he got into an argument with his girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend. And he ended up shooting her and her mother and killed them both. His former fiance, Liaka Brown, and her mother, Violet Brown, and he killed them both. And he was at first sentenced to death. And back in out in St. Kitts, they killed their prisoners by hanging them. And that verdict was appealed. And then he was just given life in prison. But last Thursday, August 4th, it says Bertel Fox was pardoned by the Governor General of St. Kitts and Nevis after his 25-year sentence, which marked his first day back in society as a free man living in London with his family. So that is some huge news. I always thought Bertel would spend the rest of his life in jail, and it was shocking when we thought that he was going to get hanged. So, yeah, it was a very tragic ending to the career of Bertel Fox, but now he is a free man and he is out. So that is some really, really breaking news. So we're going to go back in time and read this article written by our guest, Wayne Galash. And as I said, this goes back to the September 1977 issue of Iron Man magazine, which was about 20 years before this tragic accident took place where Bertel killed his ex-fiance and her mother. So I'm sure people are going to have different opinions about this. I know whenever I post a picture of Bertel on one of my social media, I get a lot of people commenting that he's a murderer and you shouldn't post stuff like that. And I guess Gary Stridham came out and he said that he thought that this was a great day and that he said Bertel was wrongly convicted and he said it wasn't his gun and he said the gun went off accidentally. I don't think many people have that opinion, but that's what Gary Stridham said on his Facebook page today. Anyways, Bertel Fox is out of jail. He is pardoned, and he is now 71 years old. Bertel was born in 1951, and for those of you that don't know his contest history, I'll go over it here a little bit. Way back in 1969, 1970, and 1971, Bertel won the Junior Mr. Britain 3 years in a row, and then he also won the Junior Mr. Europe in 1971, and then he won the Mr. Britain, which is a very big contest in 1976. He also won the Mr. Europe that year. And then that was the year where he first went to the NABBA Mr. Universe, and he took second place to Kazuo Sudo. And I remember he was very mad. He was very upset. If you've ever seen pictures of that, he's got a really mad look on his face because Kazuo Sudo beat him. Of course, Bertel was much bigger than Kazuo Sudo, but in the NABBA universe, they love those proportionate artistic physiques. And Kazuo Sudo definitely had a great physique, and Bertel was a little bit smooth in that contest. But that was also the year where he won the Mr. World contest, which was an AAU contest, and that was held in America, and he just wiped everybody out. Bertel was incredibly thick and muscular back in the 1970s. Like, nobody had that look. I mean, he had almost like a Sergio Oliva type of muscle mass. He didn't have quite the structure that Sergio had with the tiny waist and the wide shoulders, but Bertel's thickness and size was just absolutely remarkable, and he was such a strong bodybuilder. So he was really an amazing bodybuilder. In 1977, he went back to the NABBA universe, and this time he won the amateur division, the overall amateur division. And in 1978, he went into the pro division, and he beat out Serge Nubre. And Serge was very upset about that. Wayne refers to that in our interview. I believe that was in part one of our interview, where he talked about Bertel beating Serge Nubre, and Serge wanted Oscar Heidenstam, the president of NABBA, to rejudge the contest. And then in 1979, Bertel again won the NABBA Universe. So he was a three-time NABBA Universe winner, two in the professional and one in the amateur. And then he finally came over to the IFBB in 1981, and he didn't do that well. I remember when he did the Night of the Champions in 1982, he was really downsized. I think he tried to get really ripped for the contest, and Albert Beckles beat him at that show. But I remember everybody was kind of disappointed because Bertel wasn't as massive and thick as he was in the NABBA. And then his highlight of his career, I think, was when he took fifth place at the Mr. Olympia that Samir Banute won. And he was incredible that year because he was so ripped. And his career kind of went downhill after that. He didn't compete in the 1984 Olympia. And then after that, his placings in 1986, 87, 89, all the way into the early 1990s were way, way down. He just wasn't the same Bertel Fox that he used to be, and then he retired. Then this murder happened in 1997, 3 years after he did his last contest. So that is huge, huge news. And who knows? Let's see if Bertel does any interviews. I'm sure there'll be some people in the bodybuilding media trying to reach out to do interviews, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. I would be open with talking with them, but we'll see what happens. All right. In other news, I want to mention, before we forget, the passing of Charles Fautz. Charles Fautz was a very popular bodybuilder in the 1960s, 1970s. He was featured very prominently in Joe Weider's magazine. He was a good-looking guy, so he was used as a model for a lot of Joe's ads. And Charles, I got his contest history here too. He won some local shows, but his career goes all the way back to 1959. Charles was 81 years old when he passed. He died on July 28th of this year, so just like about a little over a week ago, and I forgot to mention it on last week's show, so I wanted to mention him here. But I started off competing in the AAU, and then he switched over to the IFBB, and go over some of his contest history here. He took third place in the 1969 IFBB Mr. America. That was won by John DiCola, who we've had on the show, and Charles was third place in the medium class in that show. And he also took first place that year in the Mr. International contest, which was held in Tijuana, Mexico, and Arnold won that contest. So I remember seeing a picture of that show, and Charles is standing right next to Arnold, and Arnold took first place in the tall class and the overall, and Charles won the medium class. And I think Charles was pretty good friends with Arnold. I've seen a lot of pictures of them when they were training at the old Gold's Gym owned by Joe Gold, the original. And he was definitely a mainstay at Gold's Gym. Let me see some of his other shows. He took second place in the medium class at the IFBB Mr. America to Peter Caputo. And he took third place in the Mr. Western America that year. That was won by Leon Brown. And then in 1971, Charles took second in the Mr. America and the medium class. I'm sorry, he was third in 1971 behind Boyer Coe and Pete Caputo. And in the Mr. USA, he was in second place behind Harold Poole, and Ed Corney won that contest. That was the one that was where Franco won, I think, the Mr. World that night as well. And then he went back to the Mr. International in 1972, and he took second place in the medium class to Javier Medina, who was from Mexico. And Ken Waller won the show that year. And he was also in the Mr. America that year, and he won the tall class. And Ed Corney won the overall that year. Charles had quite a career, competed a lot of shows in the 60s and the 70s, starting in the AAU and then going into the IFBB. But good-looking guy, had a great physique. So rest in peace, Charles Fautz, who died on July 28th of this year. All right. I want to mention the Tampa Pro. I was there last weekend. I was there all weekend. The show was a three-day show this year. It started on Thursday. They had a lot of Masters divisions. I didn't really see too many of those, but I was there all day Friday and all day Saturday. They have all the pro events in the IFBB. I think this is the only show besides the Olympia that features all the pro divisions, everything from women's bodybuilding to fitness to men's bodybuilding, figure, classic physique, women's physique, bikini, you name it. They're all there. They had all the divisions. So they had half of them on Friday, half of them on Saturday. So I was there watching the show. It was a very, very good competition. In the 212 division, that Keon Pearson really looked fantastic. This was probably the best he ever looked. He could have been a little bit more ripped, but Keon has a real classic physique, a small waist, great vacuum pose, and he had a real lot of muscle mass, much more than he ever had before. So this guy really has a great physique, even like an old school physique, I would say. And he is going to be really, really tough at the Mr. Olympia this year in the 212 division because he's kind of short, but he really looks strong, and it's going to be really, really tough. Speaking of the 212 division, Kamal Algarne, who won the Mr. Olympia 212 division way back in 2019, Kamal is originally from Libya. He is now living in Tampa now. He's training at the MI40 gym that was owned by Ben Pakulski, and he trains with Nick Walker, who's one of the top bodybuilders in the world, and Nick is one of the big favorites for the Mr. Olympia this year. Kamal is now 51 years old, and just for the hell of it, he decided to compete in the open division instead of doing the 212. So I guess at the Mr. Olympia this year, which is going to be held in December in Las Vegas, he is going to go back down to 212. He's not going to go in the open, but he decided just to do some open titles just to see how he would do. So he was probably about 10 pounds over his normal weight. Instead of being like 209 or 210, he was probably about 219. And I thought he looked absolutely fantastic. He still had incredible definition, incredible hardness. He's got a real quality physique, a lot of density to his physique. But he's a small guy. He's probably 5 foot five. And he was up in the open division, so he's up against some real monsters, including Akeem Williams, who is probably one of the biggest and thickest bodybuilders on the planet. And Akeem is known for coming in off condition, and he was in condition this time. He looked really good, but I thought Kamal had him. I thought Kamal just had a much better physique as far as the quality of his physique, as far as the hardness, the density. I thought he killed him on the ab pose and the most muscular poses and the rear double bicep pose, especially because Akeem has kind of high lats, so that's not a great pose for him. But Akeem was absolutely huge, and Akeem ended up pulling it off, and he won the contest. And I think a lot of people disagreed with that. I've been looking at the post on YouTube. Of course, everybody's got a show now, and everybody's got an opinion. And I would say the vast majority of people out there thought Kamal should have won. But it is what it is, and Akeem wins the contest. So he is going to the Mr. Olympia this year. And Kamal, I believe, is going to do a couple more shows. He's going to do a show this weekend in Texas. And I think there's another one the week after that. And then he will come back down and wait again, of course, for the Mr. Olympia. So we'll see what happens with him over the next couple of weeks. But it was a very exciting show. I want to congratulate my friend Dan Solomon, who is the president of the Mr. Olympia competition. He runs the Mr. Olympia. The Mr. Olympia is owned by Jake Wood. But Tim Gardner, the promoter of the Tampa Pro, gave Dan the Ben Weider Lifetime Achievement Award. So this is a very prestigious award that was awarded in the past to people like Lee Haney and Corey Everson and Linda Murray, Sean Ray, Rich Gaspari, Lee Labrada. So it's a very prestigious award. Jim Mannion, I believe, got the award last year. So they gave it this year to Dan Solomon. So congratulations to Dan. He definitely deserves it. He's done a lot for the sport, and he's doing a great job promoting the Mr. Olympia. So it was a very, very exciting weekend. I had a lot of fun. I got to hook up with my friend Mel, Mel Chancy, who is my old training partner from, believe it or not, going back almost 30 years. We trained together back in 1995, 1996, back in Chicago. And if you don't know Mel's history, he was at one time the leader of the Hell's Angels in Chicago. He was the president of the chapter, the Chicago chapter for the Hell's Angels. And Mel did a couple stints in prison, but he was always a good friend of mine, always a great guy. I remember when we were training together, I couldn't believe he was the president of the Hell's Angels because he was such a good guy and such a great personality and everything. But anyways, Mel has really turned his life around, and now he is a promoter. He promotes two NPC shows, and he's good friends with Jim Mannion. He's good friends with all the top people in the IFBB. He's at all the big shows. He's just got that kind of personality. Mel's such a great guy, and everybody just loves him when you meet him. So they are making a movie about Mel's life because, you know, it was such an incredible story of where he came from and running the Hell's Angels in Chicago, going to jail, getting out, and now he is born a Christian. And he has really turned his life around. He's got a beautiful wife, Melissa, and they live out here in Florida now, like I do. And they moved out here a couple of years after I did. So they're going to make a documentary about Mel's life. And I believe it's going to be, I don't know where it's going to be, but Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, he has a production company and they are helping put it together. And then they're going to make a scripted film after that. And John Barenthal, who's a fantastic actor, I'm sure you guys have seen him in many, many things over the last 10 years. Great actor. He's going to play Mel. So it's going to be really exciting. So I'm very happy for Mel, but we got a chance to catch up on Saturday and had a really good time. So it was a real fun weekend at the Tampa Pro. And that's always a great show. It's always one of the highlights of the competition year. Tim Gardner does such a great job. Him and his wife, Eileen, do a fantastic job. This was their 15th year promoting the Tampa Pro, and they did not ever miss a year, including when we had COVID. In fact, I think the Tampa Pro was only one of the few shows that did not have to move to another location, and they didn't even change the date. They kept it at their normal August time. Congratulations to Tim Gardner for another successful show. All right, before we get to our interview with Wayne, I did get a couple emails, so thank you guys for sending me these emails. If anybody out there wants to send me an email, I love getting your emails. It's at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will read your emails on the air. So for this first one, it says, "Hey, John, I'm writing to say how much I enjoyed the 5th anniversary podcast and particularly how great it was to watch them on YouTube, too. I can imagine it's a lot of work putting those together, but it's appreciated as it is good to see the images and the footage. These are historical pieces of bodybuilding history you are creating in themselves. I've enjoyed the podcast for years, but it also inspired me to start to go back and look at YouTube episodes that I haven't watched. For example, who looked the best in the mandatory poses with three great guests?" Yeah, my guests were for that show, Jerry Branum and Tom Terwilliger and Phil Williams. So yeah, that was we did a couple episodes of that. So if you guys haven't seen that, go back and watch that on my YouTube channel. He said, "I'd listen to talking about anything. Thanks again, John. You're the king of kings. Best wishes, Mike." All right. Thank you, Mike. And then I got another one here, and it says, "Thanks, John, for the time invested in interviewing Wayne Galash from Australia last week. There were so many valuable reflections and insightful memories from Wayne I was not aware of. I'm also surprised that I haven't heard of Wayne's video enterprise before. If it weren't for your timeless passion and hard work, John, who knows where all those memories and anecdotes would be from years of yore. Unless I'm mistaken, and I don't mind being corrected, you're the only podcaster out there keeping all these wonderful memories alive through your interviews and tireless passion. I find it very amusing, John, when you report that young bodybuilders these days are disparaging classic bodybuilders like Frank Zane and Chris Dickerson, supposedly remarking how skinny Frank was or the bicep-less Dickerson. I find such disparaging perspectives unfathomable, considering the bodybuilders of the 1970s were the modern pioneers of the sport, the era of refined aesthetics and detailed symmetry. At least back then, in the pre-1990 era, I personally recall as a youth flicking through my gym's magazines and thinking how you could imagine and even aspire looking like the bodybuilders from the 1970s to the 1980s as their bodies appeared fit, agile, and ultimately symmetrical, i.e. a body that could wear normal clothes. Oh well, at least we have passionate fans of the sport like you, John, to rekindle our nostalgia for an era that was blazing with passion, dignity, an ultimate aesthetic apotheosis of the human potential. Many thanks, John, and keep up the good work. P.S. I also find your videos from the Powerhouse Gym very inspiring as you record yourself working out brutal old school style whilst young guys in the background are sadly moping around the gym glued to their smartphones. All right. I don't know who wrote that. I didn't get a name. I'm sorry. I'll have to look that up. I'm sure he's put his name on there, but that was a great email. Thank you very much for these emails. I really appreciate the support, guys, and I really appreciate the compliments. I do have a lot of passion for the sport, and I agree with you guys. I love the old days, the 70s, the 80s. That's what we talk about on this podcast. And sport, of course, has changed. The world has changed. Everything is moving on, of course. But we can always go back and look at the golden era of bodybuilding and appreciate it. And I think you made a great point when you said that those old school bodybuilders, they were very inspiring because you could imagine yourself looking like them because they were more normal looking, even though they looked like superheroes. And that was what was so inspiring about these guys. And I know I was inspired by it too. All right. Well, thank you for the emails. And like I said, if anybody out there want to email me, it's at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, guys, without any further ado, here is part two of our interview with Mr. Wayne Galash from Australia, where we continue talking about his career of recording and videotaping some of the classic competitions and the legendary bodybuilders of the golden age of bodybuilding. Here we go. One of the most famous videos you ever did, Wayne, was Sergio Oliva in 1972. And I believe this was right after Sergio competed in the Mr. Olympia, where he lost a real controversial decision to Arnold. And there is some footage from the 72 Olympia, but you did a video shoot of Sergio in a park, right? And yes, that has to be one of your most best-selling videos, I would think, right?
Yes, it is. And it still sells today.
Yeah.
That was Sergio at his absolute best, where he just lost by virtually one vote to Arnold in Essen at that Olympia. That was about 2 days before, because he traveled straight away back to London, and then Wag Bennett helped me set up the filming session with him, the filming and photos. And that was probably, that and my shooting with Arnold would be my two most memorable sessions that I ever shot on film.
Yeah. How was Sergio when you shot him, Wayne? Was he in a bad mood because he lost?
He was mildly depressed.
Was he?
So by that, I'll say this. He wasn't sparkling, bubbling, making any jokes. He was just very quiet. And I could tell that he was depressed. Disappointed, perhaps, is a stronger word. He was disappointed that he got so close, and yet he still ended up second. And he felt that because it was held in Germany, that there were enough European judges that swung it Arnold's way, and that counted a little bit against him. So he was mildly pissed that he hadn't quite got there. So during the session, it went pretty well. But when we got near the end of the session, he said to me, "I'm tired now. Can we finish in a moment?" And so I didn't get to take all the photos that I would like to have taken. But fortunately, I took all the video part, which is the film part. I took that first.
Okay. Yeah, the video and the photos from that day are just amazing. And I think they're still really famous even today, all these years later. You know?
Yeah, you still get to see them, don't you? And unfortunately, that's been very tempting for video pirates to grab my footage and use it for their own commercial advantage. But that's what happens. If you have a success, people want to ride on the back of it, and that's life.
Yeah. It's interesting because I just bought some old magazines and bought an issue of Muscle Builder from 1973, and I was looking through it, and they had an interview with Arnold. Rick Wayne did the interview, and they were talking about the 1972 Olympia. And Arnold even said in there, he said, "Sergio looked fantastic in that show." And Arnold admitted that he wasn't at his best. And he said, "If I would have been a judge, I would have voted Sergio first." You know, so he even admitted that Sergio really should have won that contest.
It was so close. And there weren't just enough judges, put it this way, to be on Sergio's side. And so in a close decision, well, as we know, he came out second.
Yeah. Another name I want to mention is Bill Pearl. You got to see Bill Pearl at the 1971 Mr. Olympia, which was his last appearance.
Yeah, that was his last contest, yes. And what a way to go out, winning the NABBA Pro Universe, beating Sergio and Reg Park, although Reg was past his peak at that time.
Yeah.
And Bill Pearl, never forget, he had all these veins popping out in his arms. He looked absolutely fantastic, and he must have put so much effort into preparing himself to win his last contest.
Yeah.
And it was an awesome feat, because he beat other people that were great. And Bill Pearl by that time was getting to be, I'm guessing, do you know what his age was? He had to be 40.
He was 40, maybe. Yeah. I think he was 41 later in the year or so, but at 40 at the time of the show, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a wonderful victory. And afterwards, he and Leo Stern invited me up to his room for celebrations, because Bill Pearl knew me because I used to buy his books from him at wholesale and sell them in Australia. So we knew each other in a business sense as well as old friends. So that was a very, very special day when Bill Pearl won that 1971 Universe.
Yeah. I just did an interview recently with Roger Schwab, who was an IFBB judge, and he wrote a lot of articles for Iron Man magazine. And Roger told me that when he was at the 1978 Mr. America, Bill guest posed, and I think it was 25 years after Bill won the Mr. America, because he won it in 53. So this was 25 years later. And Roger said he looked so amazing. He said he could have won the Mr. America contest that night. How old was he? Like 48 years old, I think, at that time. And he said he could have won the Mr. America that night. That's how good he looked.
Yes, yeah. He was an absolute legend. And, of course, he's still with us, even though I understand he's struggling a little bit at the moment with health issues. But he's still with us. He's the last of the old legends, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is. He'll be 91 this year. Or no, 92. Yeah. He'll be 92 this year. He's 91 right now. So, yeah, I hope he lives a long life. But what a magnificent career he's had. What a great life he's had, you know.
Absolutely. I only regret that I never made the effort to go up and visit him at his home and his home gym. I always felt that I should have done that and shot some film of him training, but I never got to that stage. But that would have been something, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Another one of your most famous videos, I think, was the one you did with Arnold and Franco at the pool in Australia. And this was also, I believe, 1972, right?
Yeah, 1972. And it was early in the year. So Arnold and Franco were doing posing appearances in Australia. And the promoter asked me to come up and judge the amateur contest, which preceded Arnold's guest posing. And so I took the opportunity to make a deal. And Franco, so on the morning after the contest, we shot that footage at the side of the swimming pool.
Now what time of the year was that, Wayne? Was that like in January, February?
Yeah, yes, it was. It was very, very early in the year.
Okay.
So it was later in the year when Arnold actually peaked for that 72 Mr. Olympia in Essen, which was about September from memory.
Yeah.
So he wasn't shredded, but he still looked incredibly impressive.
Oh, my God. I was amazed. When I saw that film for the first time, I was absolutely amazed. I mean, I remember thinking, this isn't Arnold at a contest. This is Arnold guest posing, you know, in some other country, in Australia. I mean, I was just blown away. There's one part of the film when the film just starts, and Arnold's just standing there, and he's got these like light blue trunks on, and he kind of breathes in, and it's just mind blowing. And then he just looks incredible, and then he does a front double bicep. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, what a spectacular human being he was. You know, I mean, definitely, I think, you know, obviously one of the greatest bodybuilders ever. And when you can see that video, you're thinking way back in 1972, this guy was just unbelievable.
When you think back, that's 50 years ago.
That's 50 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, 50 years ago this year. Isn't that, as you said, it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Franco was there Franco joined in, and he was fantastic as well. And Arnold couldn't have been better to work with on that particular day.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, I hear people talk today, and they're like, "Well, Arnold wouldn't even win like an amateur show today." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" I mean, when you look at that video, I think to me, Arnold's the greatest bodybuilder ever, you know, and I know the bodybuilders are much bigger now, but I don't see anything that impresses me like that. You know, there's, if I see these guys today, I mean, they're definitely huge and they're freaky looking, but they don't look like that. They don't impress me the way Arnold impressed me.
No, you're right. And also Arnold had the charisma that with everything else that he had.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at some of these old magazines I have, Wayne, I mean, I'll come across a picture of Arnold or Sergio, and I feel like I'm 13 again. You know, it's like, I'm like, wow, look at this. You know, the guys just looked so unbelievable back then. It was just, it really was the golden age of bodybuilding, you know?
Yes, it was. Absolutely. It's so different today.
Yeah, it really is. What was your favorite video to shoot, Wayne? Because you also shot Mike Mentzer in California in the 70s, right? That was a big one.
Yeah. Yeah, I shot with Mike Mentzer on the beach in 1977. And then in 1978, I shot him and Ray working out in the gym. And then in that day, we did posing, the two of them posing together on the beach. So those 2 years were very, very special years for Mike. And I know I've told this story before. Mike said to me, Wayne, don't worry, I will keep posing for as long as you have film in your camera.
Wow.
That was generous. In other words, he didn't say, look, you've got half an hour and then I've got to go. He just said, I'll do as much as you want. And he was a very, very generous, spirited person. And he had an amazing, freaky sort of physique. There's nobody around today that has that freaky sort of a look that he had with his calves, his arms. Good lat spread. He was very smart to talk with him.
Yeah.
No, he was just a unique human, and we miss him. He left us far too early.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah, he had another one. He was another one that when he posed, he really, like, expanded. It almost like he exploded. Like, I remember when he did his front double bicep or that pose with his arms out to the side. It was just like, whoa, it like knocked you back in your chair almost, you know?
Yeah. I remember this. He had stretch marks, and he said, oh, that's because I grew so quickly.
Yeah. What do you think of Casey Viator when you saw him in 1978 when he finally competed in the NAVA Universe?
In a way, he was a little bit like a smaller, different version of Mike Mentzer. He was a very powerful physique. Everything he had was outstanding. His abs were good when he was right at his peak. And he was another fun guy to work with. And I worked with him two or three times, once in California, twice in California, and once I went over to Florida. And I filmed him at the Arthur Jones Nautilus place and on the beaches in Florida. So they were wonderful experiences. And that was 1978.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing he didn't do the NAVA Universe in 71 after he won the America because he was so freaky then. And it would have been interesting to see how he would have did that year, you know.
Yes, he did do a NAVA Universe, but from memory, I know he didn't win. He probably got a second or maybe a third.
He was second to Dave Johns, I think.
Second, okay. He wasn't quite as good as I had seen him look at other contests. And again, maybe he just didn't travel and hold his condition as perfectly as he would have if he was in USA. That's my theory.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on Bertel Fox, because now even today, all these years later, when I see pictures of Bertel when he was at his peak, especially in the NAVA Universe, it seems like he was almost better in the NAVA Universe than when he came over to the IFBB. So, and he was really, really young, probably early 20s, and just incredible thickness and muscle mass for a young guy like that.
Yeah, well, the other words, incredible thickness and mass.
Yeah.
That's what he had. He was he was a somewhat of a genetic freak, because I've never seen another bodybuilder that had that body shape and that look that he had.
Yeah.
And at that universe, he was next to unbeatable at the universe, as Serge Nubre found out. But where he beat Serge Nubre in particular would have been legs, and then in upper body, maybe Serge Nubre might have had an edge, but Bertil Fox had a complete package, and he was very hard to beat. And I don't think I ever saw him look better than I saw him at his Nappy Universes.
Yeah, me too. I think when he went over to the IFBB, he seemed like he had a hard time hitting his peak. And then, of course, he was spectacular in the 83 Olympia, where he got fifth place. But then after that, he just kind of faded, and he never was the same again, you know?
Yeah, he sort of disappeared, and then he had a very sad ending, as we all know, that although he's still alive, I believe he's sitting inside prison.
Yeah.
It was a very sad end to a wonderful career.
Yeah, it was a tragic ending, really. I mean, you know, it, like you said, he is still alive, but he's been in prison. He'll be in prison for the rest of his life because of what he did, killing his girlfriend and her mother. But he really was an unbelievable bodybuilder in his time, you know.
Yeah, he was. And I was lucky to see him at what I call his all-time peak, which is his NABBA peak.
Yeah. Tell me your thoughts also, Wayne, on seeing Arnold in his last Mr. Universe win for NABBA in 1970. That had to be really spectacular just to see Arnold on stage.
Yes, it was. I mean, that was one of the most one-sided wins I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's no disrespect to Dave Draper and Reg Park. They gave Reg Park second, but I personally felt Dave Draper was a little bit better on the day.
Yeah, I do too.
Reg was such a legend. I think that Reg's name helped him get second place. But when they walked out on stage, it was like Arnold was a different competitor, and all of the others were just there to sort of make up the number.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Arnold was in. He was in fantastic shape at the 1970 NABBA Universe. I've never seen a winner more dominant over the rest of the field than probably he was on that particular day.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, he was only 23 years old that year.
Yeah, because at that time he had most of his Olympia victories were still ahead of him.
Still ahead of him, right.
I mean, this was early in his career, and he was so dominant and so outstanding and charismatic to go with it that it was just a performance that I don't think I've ever seen the likes of it before.
Really?
Certainly not at a NABBA Universe, where one person was so far ahead of everybody else in the field. That's how I saw it.
Did you see the prejudging that year too, Wayne?
Yes, I did. I stood up for the whole prejudging because they didn't have seating. And so I stood up. It was in a hotel ballroom. And I snapped a few photographs, but I didn't try and film it because I was just so fascinated seeing Arnold for the first time live right there in front of me. So I enjoyed the moment, took a few photos, and then it would have been the next day at the finals that I took the film of him actually winning.
Right.
Unfortunately, that film turned out pretty good because they had excellent lighting.
Yeah, yeah. What was he like at the prejudging? Was he talking to the other competitors like Reg Park and Dave Draper? I know he knew both of those guys pretty well.
Yes, and he probably knew Dave Draper quite well. He was chatting to them. I just need to – this is just
there you
are. Dropped out. Back again. It just sort of faded. Okay, I'll start that again. At the NABBA Universe, I don't remember Arnold talking very much to the other competitors, but I do remember him having a joke on the side with Reg Park because Reg had been his idol. And so they were friends from way back, and he struck it more like as if he was an uncle to Reg rather than the fact that Reg was much older than Arnold. And Dave Draper looked pretty good as well. And I was really disappointed that they didn't give him second place because I did feel that Dave Draper deserved second at that contest.
Yeah. That's why I was so disappointed that Arnold wasn't able to compete in 1971 when Bill Pearl was there, because it was Bill Pearl and Sergio and Reg Park. And can you imagine if Arnold would have been involved in that lineup as well? And, you know, maybe the little spiking out he would have tried to do. And, you know, I mean, him and Sergio already had a little bit of a history. They competed in 69 and 70. So, I mean, I'm sure his spiking out, I don't think, would have worked on Bill Pearl. So that whole dynamic of Arnold and Bill Pearl and Sergio, that would have been so, so interesting on stage. I mean, I really, to this, you know, that's one of the shows that I really wish would have happened, you know.
Yeah, so do I. And I understand that I think Joe Weider didn't want Arnold to be at that contest. Is that
right?
Have you heard that story?
Yeah, that's what I heard too, that he wouldn't allow Arnold to go in the show.
So that's the greatest contest that never took place.
I know. It really is. It really is. I mean, you know, we say, like, the debate is always, you know, would Arnold have beaten Bill Pearl? But it's not just who would have won. I just would have loved to have seen, like I said, that whole dynamic of all those guys on stage, all these legends in one show. And, you know, the way that the NAMA universe was judged, where it was not on a stage. It was in a, like you said, it was in a ballroom, and they're right in front of the judges. And who knows what would have happened. It's just, and Arnold was in incredible shape that year, too, in 71.
He was. In 1971, although he wasn't in London, I saw Arnold winning the 1971 NABBA Universe in Paris. And this was 1 week after the NABBA Universe.
Yeah.
And this was before social media and emails, because when Sergio went to Paris, he told us that he didn't know that he'd been banned.
Yeah.
We're going in the NABBA Universe a week before, but apparently they had sent him a message to say that he was out of the contest, so he was there anyway. So Serge Nubray pleaded with the Weiders for Sergio to be able to guest post, which he did. You know that story. And I'm sure I probably told the last time we chatted. That particular contest, there were so many people at the contest. I remember people standing around the walls of the theater. It was absolutely packed out.
Wow, unbelievable. And you were there, right, Wayne? You saw Arnold in 71, and you saw Sergio in 71.
Yeah, I was filming it from the front row because I was a part of the British team. When I say part of, they invited me to go with them to the contest. That was Wagon Diane Bennett. And they took over the British team to the contest, which of course included Alberto Fox. No, sorry, Al Beckles.
Albert Beckles.
Al Beckles was the guy they took over, and he was in the amateur universe, which preceded the Olympia. And it's a very long story, but he ended up winning the overall unit title that day.
Yeah. Wow. So you got to see the NABBA universe that Bill Pearl won, where he beat Sergio and Reg Park. And then you went over to Paris and you saw Arnold compete and win the Olympia, and Sergio was guest posing. Now, I heard that Sergio was in much better shape for in Paris at the Olympia than he was in NABBA, right, at the NABBA Universe.
That's right. I wrote about that at the time. He was much better. His physique was crisp and tight and hard. He'd got rid of the thinness, which I saw in London at the Universe, and he was absolutely looking flawless. And I would have loved to see him being compared side by side with Arnold. And in my opinion, it possibly could have gone either way, because they were both so outstanding on that day.
Wow.
But they never stood side by side. It didn't happen.
Oh, man. Another show that should have happened that never did, right?
It should have happened. And of course, Franco had been banned because I believe he had taken some appearance money for something. And so he also had to appear as the guest poster at that event.
Yeah. God, unbelievable. Yeah, that would have been really great to see Arnold and Sergio pose off again, especially after Arnold beat Sergio in 70, because they were like 1-1, because Sergio beat Arnold in 69, then Arnold beat Sergio in 70. So this would have been the rematch, and this would have been, you know, to decide who was the best.
It could have gone either way. And then, as you know, when they had their next rematch was in 1972,
right,
as talked about, where Arnold, he got there by, I believe, about the judges putting him in front of Sergio. So I understand it was very, very close.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we look back at those old days. Those were really the great exciting contests, you know, that I still relive them all the time on this podcast because, you know, I think that was like really, it's just such a great golden age of bodybuilding, you know.
Well, you know, you're going to run out of people like me that were actually there at the time.
Right, I know. When I started the podcast, I thought I was only going to go like 1 year because I thought I would run out of people to talk to. But here we go. We're going on 5 years now.
Yeah. Well, I think that I've shared with you some new different stories today because in our previous podcast chat, we talked a lot about the NABBA universe specifically.
Yeah.
And we went through a lot of them year by year, didn't we?
But we went year by year. Yeah.
We're talking about everybody this year, particularly from the golden era right up to maybe if we could finish with talking about Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that because you got to film him when he came to Australia.
Yes, 2005, I made a deal with him, and we filmed with the two video cameras and a team and still photographers, and we shot over 2 days. So we did primarily upper body in Melbourne, and then he came over here to Adelaide where I live, and then we filmed his leg workout, and I sent you an amazing photograph that you can include if you wish. Did you get that photo as a side-on shot of his hamstrings and his legs?
No, I didn't see that.
Looked incredible. Okay, I'll send it to you again.
All right.
And that was from a gym here in Adelaide. So we did this 2-day shoot with him, and then he gave a seminar for us here in Adelaide. And this was really right at the end of his golden year because it was soon after this that Jay Cutler took over.
Yeah, Jay Cutler won the next year, yeah, so... And Ronnie was still healthy, so he was still training with super heavy weights, I'm assuming, right?
Right. So I would have to rate Ronnie as the most amazing bodybuilder I have seen of the modern era.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler was pretty fantastic as well, but Ronnie Coleman was just extraordinary, and he's got the record. He's got it, you might say, he's up there with, Lee Haney, if you count victories. He and Lee Haney are two of the greatest bodybuilders of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what do you think about Ronnie now with all the problems he's having, all the injuries and everything?
I think it's very sad that that's the price that he's had to pay for his success in the past. It's clearly that that's what happened, and he took so much out of himself to get all those Olympia victories that there has been a price. And he's paying the price now because his body is pretty much racked out, worn out, damaged, and that is the way it is. There's always a price to pay.
Yeah. Yeah, he had so much passion for not just bodybuilding competition, but he just had passion for lifting weights. He just absolutely loved it. So as he got bigger and bigger and stronger, he just kept pushing it as far as he could go, you know, and I think the main reason he did it was not just to win the titles, but just a lot of it was just because he loved training, you know, and he loved pushing himself like that.
Yeah, he loved heavy weights. I'll tell you what he said to me the last time. I saw him at the Arnold 2020, and he was being wheeled in to the Patil Grand Hall, and he came up to me, and I was behind my camera and a tripod, and he said, "Wayne, what are you doing? You're still filming." And I said, "Yeah, of course I am. I love it." He said, "I thought you should be retired." So we had a little joke, and there I am, luckily still going. And there was poor Ronnie being wheeled around in the wheelchair. So it was a bit of a poignant moment that one I always remember.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, Wayne, have you ever thought about retiring, or are you going to keep going?
Oh, I definitely keep going. To keep going keeps you alive. It keeps you motivated for everything you do in life.
Yeah.
It keeps you thinking, I've got to stay fit. Well, I'd still go to the gym, and I go to the gym 3 days a week.
Yeah.
So, no, I'll only stop doing when my body won't allow me to do it any longer. And I think it keeps me young, healthy, mentally fit, physically fit. And as I said before, it's a passion, and you do your passion for as long as your body will let you do it. And I think you'll be the same with your podcast. I don't see you saying, "Oh, well, I'm going to retire soon. I've done quite a few now."
Yeah.
I bet you enjoy it as well.
Yeah, I do. I don't know if my podcast will, I don't think it'll last as long as, you know, you're recording the videos, but I'm glad to hear that. I mean, I'm glad you're still passionate about this and you want to keep doing it. That's great news for all of us.
Well, also, too, there's one more thing. I've got all these videos here that people can download and enjoy and live the past history. There's over 2,200 we presently have on offer.
But 2,200.
What people don't know, 2,200 different subjects you can download. Now, that's not 2,200 different videos, because if a video is too long, it's split into two halves.
Okay.
So, but I've still got a lot of my early work, which I haven't yet offered on video or as download, because sometimes you put things aside and you work with the most recent contest.
Right.
I've got a lot of wonderful. So I want to get all of this stuff out before my time is up for people to enjoy the whole career, the whole history of what I was able to record.
What's some of the early stuff that you haven't done yet?
Well, I've got some of the guys, for example, that competed in AAU Mr. Americas in the early 70s,
okay,
where I shot features with them. I've got the films that I shot, and I've got them stored on a big master hard drive. But I've got to physically go in and, like you said, edit a whole lot of these people together, people that aren't household names but were damn good bodybuilders.
Yeah.
I'll give you one that comes, Eddie Giuliani. I've got footage of him. I filmed him on the day after he was a runner-up to Danny Padilla in a AAU Mr. America. No, so it might have been IFBB.
IFBB, 77.
And 77, that's the one, yes, when Danny beat him in his class, and then Danny went on and took the overall.
Right.
So I had a shoot with Eddie the next day, and then I had a shoot with Danny Padilla later on that week. So there's lots of stories like that, where people such as these guys from the past have sort of slipped to one side, and I've got to get them all released and share them with all the fans.
Yeah, wow, okay. So how can the fans out there contact you, Wayne, or get to your website? It's GMV, GMV Productions.
Well, actually, the website, the best one to use is GMVBodybuilding, that's all one word, .com.
Okay.
Where you can find all of the downloads. The older website, gmv.com.au, that's where I store all the history, but that's not where you order stuff. That's where you find results and stories, articles and photos. But if you wanted to look at downloads or DVDs, gmvbodybuilding.com is the place to go.
All
right. And then it's pretty easy to just navigate from there. Or there's GMV Bodybuilding on Facebook, where I put up something different every day.
Okay. All right. So gmvbodybuilding.com is the place to go to get the download.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's the place. And for example, just a bit of quick news, I've just made a recent arrangement with Mark Dugdale to offer all of his 5 DVDs as downloads, because they haven't been available. And so I've worked out an arrangement with Mark, and we're putting another one up today. So there's Driven, Beyond Driven, and then there's the one about the dungeon where he's with Ronnie Coleman.
Oh,
you probably know that. So that there's some great stuff that's coming up from these other people that put out their own DVDs. We are doing deals with all of these guys so that people can get them as a video download from us.
Oh, okay.
And then of course, what I do is I share the profits with the person that owns the copyright.
Oh, okay. Awesome. That's great.
That's how it's working. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully a lot of our listeners who listen to this show will check out your website who weren't aware of it before. But like I said, Wayne, I've said this before, I think you're an unbelievable asset in the world of bodybuilding as far as the history that you've recorded. You've recorded all these legendary bodybuilders, and you got them on film. If it wasn't for you, we never would have saw these guys on film. We never would have saw them moving, because nobody was doing that back then. We only would have saw pictures. So thank God you were around back then and you were able to record this. And those movies that you took are going to last the test of time. And there will always have those videos to look back on, no matter how old we get or what time it is, you know. And we'll always be able to see these guys as they were, you know, like talking about Arnold and Bill Pearl and Frank Zane and Sergio. I mean, we never would have saw that before if it wasn't for you, Wayne.
Yeah. Well, it's my small contribution to the sport and for the history of the sport. And it's been my privilege to be there to record these people and to share it for people that come after me, both now, of course, and in the future. So it's been a pleasure. And thank you, John, too, for having a chat to me about this history.
Absolutely. Well, it's my pleasure, Wayne. It was great to connect with you again. And I look forward to seeing you at the Olympia this year. I haven't seen you in a couple of years. We should also mention, before I let you go, we did get a chance to visit with the late Peter McGough a couple of years ago when you were here in Florida. And you and I drove down to his house and we got to visit with him. And this is before Peter, a couple of years, I think, before Peter passed away. He was battling cancer at the time. But that was a memorable day that we got to spend with him.
Yes, it was. And I believe I've seen your footage from that day. And Peter also shot some stuff with me that was just specially for me. And I'm saving that up. And that will appear in my biography DVD, which is being edited now.
Oh, okay. You're making a video of your biography?
Mark Martinez is putting it together for me.
Oh, okay. Okay, awesome. All right, I look forward to seeing that.
He's a great documentary maker, and he did the history of the Gold's Gym thing, and he very kindly offered to put together all the history that I've got on myself. And so I sent over a hard drive to him, and he's in the very early stages of that.
Oh,
and
great.
I included my chat with Peter McGough from that day that was slightly different to your chat. So there's some unseen material that will be coming up in the future.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Mark's a great guy. I had him on my podcast too, and I really enjoyed his movie that he just finished up. So I hope that's a big success for him.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy, and he's passionate about what he does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad we got a chance to meet with Peter that day because that was a great day that we got to spend with him. And I know he was fighting cancer, he was fighting it for many, many years, and he finally lost his battle a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was a very special day for all of us, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. All right, Wayne. Well, I appreciate you calling in today from Australia so we could catch up and go over some of your memories from all those years of filming. And I look forward again to seeing you this December at the Mr. Olympia in Vegas. Is your wife, Tina, going to come with you again?
Probably not, because it's so important for somebody here running the business, because people are contacting us 7 days a week and they expect us to be here for an instant response. So probably I'll be on my own this time.
Okay. Well, give Tina my best. I haven't seen her in years either. So I hope she's doing well as well.
She's doing fine. And I look forward to catching up with you back in USA. As I said, it's been a long time since March 2020 when I last saw you.
Yeah, it sure has. All right, Wayne. Well, it was great catching up with you again. I look forward to seeing you, and I'll be talking to you during the year before we get to the Olympia. But thanks again for coming on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
Thanks, John. It's been an absolute privilege. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, buddy. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to my friend Wayne Galash for spending a couple of hours talking with me about his career. And we all owe Wayne a big debt of gratitude. And be sure to visit his website, GMV Productions, to check out some of the videos he has available if you guys are interested in watching some of them and downloading them for your own collection. All right. Before we get to our story about Bertel Fox that was written by Wayne, I just want to mention, of course, that I am still doing training, online training for Pro Physique. So I have the link below if you guys are interested in having someone design a workout and diet program for you. I will do that for you. And I also have the Muscle Maturity podcast that I'm doing with Nick Trigilli and Samir Banut. I have the link for that below as well. And I just did an interview with RX Muscle about the Tampa Pro. So I put that in the link as well. So check all that out if you're interested. All right, guys, let me read the story called Bertel Fox, His Story, written by Wayne Galash, and this comes from the September 1977 issue of Iron Man magazine with Mario Nieves on the cover. It says, in my humble opinion, Bertel Fox has been the physique sensation of 1976.
Born in St. Kitts, West Indies, and now of Wembley, UK, Bertel has recently won the Mr. Britain, the Mr. Europe, and the Mr. World, plus a runner-up placing in the NABBA Amateur Mr. Universe. He has also won the Junior Mr. Britain a record 3 times. At the Mr. World, he won all the Best Body Part awards, demonstrating his great combination of size, symmetry, and muscularity, which stamps him as potentially one of the greatest physiques of all time. Probably his best and most striking body part is his arms, similar in shape and balance to Larry Scott, only bigger and with a better peak and greater muscularity. I asked Bertel what his arms measured, but he modestly replied he doesn't measure them, as overall proportion is his main goal. However, one of his training partners assured me that his arms were 21 inches some time ago. It's also not surprising that Fox's favorite bodybuilder is Larry Scott, and of course his favorite body part is arms. Bertel started training 10 years ago at the age of 14, and he had a good natural build and reasonable calves. At the moment, Bertel's whole life is geared for physical culture, hours of training, contests, and giving exhibitions. He is not married, which for a young physique champion is probably wise. Broken marriages are unfortunately very common among physique and sporting champions due to the tremendous strain and sacrifices which must be made to reach the top. Bertel trains hard and heavy all the time, and he's never out of shape. He needs 3 or 4 training partners to lift up his extremely heavy dumbbells for his dumbbell bench press and preacher curls. Fox doesn't favor lighter training prior to contests, and he trains heavy as usual, only longer with extra sets. One of his secrets is a very strong mental approach during each workout. Bertel talks to himself constantly during each heavy set, pushing and psyching himself on to squeeze out an extra rep or two, pushing through the pain barrier. His philosophy is that he won't be beaten, and to stay in front of other top physiques, he's prepared to train harder than anyone else. This remarkable young man has a massive desire to win, great personal drive, plus a tremendous capacity for long, brutal workouts. 1 month prior to the Mr. Universe, Bertel took leave from his job so he could train twice a day, 2 hours each session, 6 days a week. This degree of training is not necessarily recommended, and it happens to be fine for Fox, but probably not for the average bodybuilder. At a height of 5'9", he usually competes at a massively defined body weight of 220 pounds. Between contests, his weight goes up a little, but he still stays in hard shape for his many guest posing exhibitions that he gives throughout Britain and Europe. Bertel's training is done at Del Martin's gym in Southall, Middlesex, just outside of London. It's a real bodybuilder's heavy training gym, the best of its type in London, and Martin gives every assistance to Fox in his training in much the same way that Leo Stern used to help Bill Pearl. Bertel's main training partner is Phil Toppin, also a top title holder, and they both prefer to train with very heavy poundages. For chest, specially made 185-pound dumbbells are used by Bertel in the bench press for 10 reps, and then to normal bench press, working up to 3 or 4 reps with 500 pounds. When a lower weight is being used on the bench press, they are supersetted with incline dumbbell presses with 165-pound dumbbells. Fox prefers a loose style with absolutely maximum weights. In the years I've been photographing top physiques, I have never seen weights of this magnitude handled with such apparent ease. For shoulders, seated dumbbell press with 125-pound dumbbells, 5 sets of 6, and then press behind the neck, and finally dumbbell lateral raises standing and then bent over. For the back, end of the bar, hands together, or T-bar rows, and then single-arm dumbbell bent over rowing, very heavy. Next, chins with up to 100 pounds of weight attached to his waist, and finally chinning side to side on the chinning bar to touch the chest and hands together. Sounds like close grip chins. And then for the arms, arms are trained daily. Favorite exercises being dumbbell incline bench curl, slight cheat with 85-pound dumbbells, and then close grip barbell curls, heavy, followed by Scott bench dumbbell curls as heavy as possible. Bertel prefers to use whatever curling exercise takes his fancy on the day, and he doesn't stick to the same routine week after week. He likes plenty of sets until the muscles feel tired. For the triceps, the lat machine pushdown is his favorite. And then a novel variation, reverse, behind-the-back pushdowns are then done. 8 sets. Finally, French presses on an incline bench. For the abdominals, Roman chair sit-ups and hanging leg raises from a chinning bar in high repetitions. Finally, bent-over twists, 5 sets of 100. For the legs, squats front and back, and then back squats and leg extensions. Bertel favors an unusual leg curl done with a single 100-pound dumbbell held between his bare feet, and then heavy work on the calf machine. And fortunately, Fox has always had pretty good calves. As a general rule, he does 5 sets of each exercise for a total of approximately 30 sets for each body part. At home, he does up to an hour daily of posing practice and tensing each body part for maximum separation. Bertel consumes 4 pounds of protein 90 powder a week, and he also drinks protein during his workout, mixing it with eggs and skim milk. He also uses multivitamin supplement and desiccated liver. I would say Bertel's development is the nearest I have seen in type and impact to Sergio's, and who knows how far he will go. As he improves and refines the incredible physique he presently has, I expect Bertel Fox will rank as one of the greatest physiques of all time. And Wayne has a couple pictures with this article, a couple that he took, like in a garden, and then there's one picture from the Mr. World contest, and he just absolutely looks unbelievable. He's doing that famous most muscular pose where he's got the back of his hands together in front of him, and his chest is just insane. I mean, I'm telling you, when Bertel was out in this time in the mid-70s, there was nobody that looked like him. Nobody. Nobody in the IFBB or anybody that looked like Bertel Fox. He was just absolutely incredible. And some of these weights that he used, 185-pound dumbbell presses for his chest and 165-pound inclines, unbelievable. I just saw Nick Walker training at the Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club where I train. I saw him today doing chest, and he was doing incline dumbbell presses with 200-pound dumbbells. But this is what, 50 years later? Because this story was in 1976. So you can imagine 50 years ago, almost 50 years ago, how Bertel looked in the gym and in contests. I mean, he was just absolutely phenomenal. And it was kind of ironic what Wayne said about not being in a relationship and how that would ruin his concentration. And that's eventually what brought Bertel down, was being in a relationship, being jealous of his ex-fiancée, I guess, being in a relationship with someone else. And I think that's what brought about his going to that shop and with the gun and then ending up murdering her. So, wow, crazy how life works, huh? All right, guys, that is all we've got for the show this week. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Wayne Galash. We will be back next week with another interview on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Until then, train hard, stay safe, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.